with our negotiators for our bargaining units, and instructions were given. No decisions on specific items were made. And we have consensus on the order of business.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's stick with the agenda. Approval of the minutes. We have a set from November 5th, 2013. Entertain a motion.
I'll move approval.
I'll second.
Okay, a motion by Mr. Questenberry, second by Mr. Buckman. Any comments, changes, questions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Thank you. Student representatives, we have two. We're going to start with Brooklyn. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you. I didn't know that scheduling issue. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. So my name is Scott Hicks, representing San Luis Obispo High School. First up, San Luis Obispo has finally launched its brand new website, which has been long awaited. It looks really nice from my perspective and also from my mom's perspective, what she said. It's a huge improvement from our last archaic website. Professionals were hired for the design, so it's no wonder why it looks so good. And so that's really exciting. We just started our second trimester because we're on the trimester system yesterday. So we finished finals last week, and then students had Friday off, whereas the teachers came and did professional development. And I learned that at that professional development day, all the teachers worked together to do the English Common Assessments. So they got that done on that day so that English teachers don't have to get pulled out this week to grade those. So that seemed like a really good system that Mr. O'Connor had them do. In sports, just to go real quick, girls golf finished second in league. Cross country, boys won league, and both boys and girls qualified for CIF. Boys are still in CIF, whereas we just have one individual girl going on. In girls tennis, we finished second in league and made it to CIF. We have a doubles team that is currently on its way to Santa Barbara to play in CIF individuals. Boys water polo, third in league, qualified for CIF. Girls volleyball, fourth in league, made it to CIF. And then we have a new banquet for all fall sports on December 2nd. And that's a new thing that we haven't done. We usually do a big banquet for all the sports, but we're doing it for just fall sports this time, and they'll have a winter sport one too. So what that's going to be is they're going to feed all the fall. December 13th, finally, we have a blood drive, which we've done in the past, and that's always very successful. Oh, and then finally, we also have our Student Congress coming up in 2 weeks. Student Congress has been great this year. Really good voice of the students being heard by the administration. Mr. O'Connor's always there to answer questions, and I think Student Congress has been a fantastic addition. We revived it last year, so that's really good. And that's all from SLO High. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Scott. Go ahead, Brooklyn.
Good evening, everyone. So right now in ASB over at Morobe High School, we are planning our week of winter, and that is scheduled for the first week back from Thanksgiving break, December 2nd through the 6th. And it's basically just a fun winter-themed week full of activities and dress-up days for the student body. And we have dress-up days such as Pajama Day, Holiday Hat Day, and my personal favorite, Ugly Sweater Day. And we are also planning our mini mock rock. It won't be happening until February 14th, I believe. But we are very close to we need to figure out one more act, and then we can start doing all of our choreographing and getting our costumes together and things. And mini mock rock is to show the student body what we are expecting to see at mock rock for this year. And that's always a really fun gig for us. It's a lot of hard work, but it's worth it. For sports, girls volleyball and football both qualified for CIF. They're both no longer in it, but they both had very solid seasons and they worked their tails off. And our boys cross country team, I heard, has won third in state, I believe. Yeah. And some other events that are coming up. We have our choir winter concert on Tuesday, December 3rd at the Cal Poly Performing Arts Center at 7, and tickets are $11, and a parking is free. And 2 days after that, on that Thursday, is the band concert, and our school's winter play, The Diviners, is set to be December 12th, 13th, and 14th, and I'm doing tech for that. And I haven't really seen any of the scenes yet, but just knowing some of the actors and seeing little snippets of their lines, it's going to be a very good show. So I encourage all of you to go.
Thank you both, and as always, we value your input if you want to stick around. Otherwise, we know you have perhaps one or two other things going on this evening, and we would understand. Thanks for both for updating us on the schools. And we will move on to correspondence. We received a number of items of correspondence, one from G.R. Flores regarding the Johnson Avenue project, and one from Dr. Raja regarding the hazards of asthma potentially being impacted by idling school buses. And we have, looks like, four letters regarding the TEACH relocation or the TEACH program. And all the board members were supplied with that correspondence and have had an opportunity to review it. We'll move on to public comment. Public comment is a period for individuals to address the board. Typically, it's on items that are not on the agenda. As an opportunity for public comment will be made available for each item on the agenda as we go along. We will limit the public comment to 20 minutes per board bylaws, and should any board member wish that to be handled differently, just let the chair know. And with that, we will move to our first request to speak, Mr. Questenberry.
Yes, and what I'm going to do is read all three requests so that when one person is finished their comment, then the next person can just come forward. So we will start with Chuck Dowdle, followed by Tricia Weiss, followed by Jarris Greenblatt. So Chuck Dowdle, please. And we allot 3 minutes for public comment.
Up there. Folks, when you speak, you'll notice some lights up there in front of you.
Okay.
And as they get toward the red one, that means...
I don't see any lights on yet.
Well, we didn't want to steal any of your time.
We're not taking any of your time.
No. When explaining the...
Oh, okay.
As soon as you tell us your name on all...
3 minutes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. My name is Chuck Dowdle. I live in Cambria, California. I got interested in the topic of gifted and talented students when I read an article in the Tribune, and I received a letter from one of my former gifted and talented students from Santa Rosa, California, and I'd just like to read part of the letter to you because I think it's relevant to the recommendations that you've received from the Accelerated Learning Committee and from your superintendent. So just shut me down. At the end of 3 minutes, my wife said, change your shirt because you won't be able to keep your mouth shut when you get there. Dear Mr. Dowdle, my name is Carol Agnew Smith. You were my seventh grade English teacher at Santa Rosa Junior High School in 1958-59 school year. English classes, spelling and grammar, and language and composition. For 2 hours every day, I had the good fortune to be your student. Even as a 12-year-old, I recognized that your classroom was special. You taught life lessons as well as grammar lessons. One vivid recollection is of my introduction to censorship. You were reading the enlightening Diary of Anne Frank. An unenlightened parent objected to references to Anne's menstrual cycle in the book. You were forced to rescind the reading assignment. Fortunately, we were reading our own copies of the book, not school-issued copies. And while you expressed extreme disappointment that we could no longer read the book as a class assignment, you encouraged us all to finish reading it on our own. I believe almost every person... Thank you.
Did you want to summarize? No.
Yeah, I could summarize. It's sort of interesting in retrospect to receive a missive like this from one of your formers. And the girl goes on to say that she was hired over in the state and she wrote some of the governor's correspondence for him. I guess... She just goes on and details all of the different things that we did in the class that have helped her. And one I remember, well, I could tell you this when I got there. I didn't know I was going to have this class. And here I was with 30 kids, and this was the first year they were experimenting with accelerated kids. Sputnik had come out, and they wanted to make sure that everybody was up with Sputnik. And so they gathered the kids from the city of Santa Rosa, and they put them in this class. And why I got them, I don't know. But I was just finishing my master's thesis, and I was wondering, well, what am I going to do with these kids? So I had them write a research paper in detail, pick their own topic, and that's one of the things she comments on. She said, I never had to learn how to write a research paper in college because I had it down. And I'm just thinking that what these kids really need and what they want is a challenge. I know there's so much technology nowadays, but this is what really turned these kids on. And I have others who have written me and told me this. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you sharing that with us.
Hi there. He's a little taller than I am. Hi, my name is Tricia Vase, and I have a charter school in Santa Barbara County, and it's sponsored through Blackman Union School District right now. We have a learning center in San Luis Obispo County, and it's in Arroyo Grande, and we have a waiting list of 70 kids on that want to go to that charter school, and we can't take them because there's a bunch of laws around charter schools and counties and numbers and all this stuff, and so I am actively looking to open a charter in San Luis Obispo County, and I had a pleasure of meeting and talking with Eric Prater, and really nice guy, very proactive in education, and thought I'd come introduce myself. I'm not petitioning you at this point. I would just like to introduce myself, tell you a little bit about our school, and we're looking for a great relationship, and we have a great relationship with Blackman Union in Santa Barbara County. We'd like to have that same relationship in San Luis Obispo County and eventually in Ventura County as well. So a little bit about our school is it's a homeschool hybrid program. Our kids come 2 to 3 days a week to school for 2 full school days, and then some enrichment classes are offered on the third day, and then they homeschool the other days. And so it's a really unique blend. It does exist in other places, but fairly new in this area. And we are really excited about it. I put together, I'll keep this brief because you have a packed audience back here. But I have a couple of handouts. And it talks just a little bit about homeschooling and the growth of homeschooling and the growth of charter schools in California and across the nation. Because most people don't know what it is in like San Francisco Bay Area, San Diego, Orange County, they're prolific. Charter schools are very prolific and very exciting, and that's actually where I'm from. But in this area, they're not very well represented, and I think a lot of people just kind of don't know what they are. So I put together just a quick little 2-page information sheet I was hoping you guys would read and know. It says a little bit about our school. We grew from 31 to 430 kids. A little too fast, quite often.
As far as donating fabric and working with Lisa, collaborating with some of her students. I also work with Cuesta College, although it's dwindling there. And I've worked with, had a gal who shadowed me a couple weeks ago for her senior assignment at Morro Bay High. And when my son was at Loam's Middle School, I would donate to Gail and Charlie fabrics, all types of fabrics for their programs for home ec. So in putting together fabrics this year, I donated some to San Luis Obispo High, and I was getting ready to get some over to Kyle Pruitt for Gail at the middle school, and found out that they're going to drop home ec. And I know maybe I'm old-fashioned here, but I understand that that's not technology. The future is technology, and I'm here to tell you, until we all have robots, these children need to know how to cook something and how to be self-reliable. One of the comments that I was told was that everybody eats out. Well, maybe students eat out, maybe college students eat out, but the minute they get married and they've got some kids at home, I don't think they have discretionary income to eat out. And so I feel that I would want to speak because I've been in the apparel industry I'm the director of design and merchandising, and I've been a design and product development person since 1986, and it's supported my family. And it supports a lot of families here in town and also in Santa Maria. And so I just hate to see this dwindle, and I hate to see the schools just throw home ec, and I hear that shop is, you know, going away. I don't know that much about shop myself, but it's sort of the counterpart to home ec. But I wanted to speak out and just say that I think it's a mistake. And if you're looking for people to help you keep it in and participate, because I know a lot of times people have good ideas, but there's no one to come up and say, you know, well, I'll help on it, I'll work on it, do you need a committee? I'm a single mom, but I'm willing to help, and I imagine there's other people. So I hope we can keep the home ec and, you know, sewing and cooking and those types of basic elementary skills in the schools. Thank you.
And Dr. Prater, perhaps you could have some staff member talk with Jairus regarding the offerings we do have at various levels in our school system dealing with home ec.
I'd be happy to. Ms. Greenblatt, could you please leave your contact information with Ms. Holmes for me? Thank you.
I left my email on there.
Oh, you did? Okay, thank you.
Okay, anyone else would like to address the board on during public comment on an item that's not on the agenda? Do we have any other requests, Jim?
No.
Okay. Seeing no one coming forward, we will move on to business update. Is that going to be you, Ryan? Or business update? Yeah.
I thought Rick went first, so it threw me off a little bit. Well, I just to let the board know, I'm going to be attending the California School Business Officials Symposium on Thursday and Friday this week, Universal City, and so hopefully to, you know, learn as much as I can about the new LCAP process and all the things that are happening on at the state right now. Kristen Newland and myself and Julie Lang met with two different groups to look at the Affordable Care Act information and the effect on the district, and so really got some valuable information and learned a lot about in terms of the tests that we have to go through and checking out our employees, and so that was really interesting. And so,
Mr. Pinkerton, let me just interrupt you for a second. For the benefit of the folks here, could you just give a little nutshell on LCAP?
Yeah, so LCAP is the Local Control Accountability Plan. So basically, we used to do a budget plan and then our educational plan for the district. And now, under the new governor's formula, the local control funding formula, we have to put together what's called an LCAP, which basically will mesh the educational plan with the budget. So it's something new that we're going to be working on in the spring. Okay. So the Affordable Care Act, again, was some really good information. Mrs. Newland starting to pull that together in terms of effects, looking at our employees, those that work over 30 hours, all those types of things. So I hope to bring the board some more information in terms of that process. We did learn that it's going to be vitally important for us to work with CISC and make sure that we have plans that are affordable for our employees. And also trying to work with them on possibly having a tiered rate plan that we can offer to all employees. And so those are some of the things that we'll be working with CISC on and as this goes forward and as we progress. But I'll keep the board updated.
Thank you. And let's see.
Then those courses, as well as the assessments that go along with them. So this is a great honor, and I'm sorry I did not bring it with me. I will bring that for the December 10th board meeting in full regalia. It's a great honor, I think. Yeah, I think it's really great.
Is that it for your update? Thank you. And next we'll move on to a resolution regarding the delegation of signature authority.
We normally bring this to you every January as we begin the fiscal year, but we also bring revised resolutions periodically when we have a change in personnel, and we realized recently that we had not yet done so once we hired Kristen Newland, so this resolution adds her to the list of authorized signatories.
And as I understand it, this is a resolution to authorize signatories for amounts exceeding $500 in funds, not to exceed.
No.
Not,
only one person has limited authority up to $500. That's our buyer. The rest of the persons are more executive staff and have higher authority than that, authority as the board just allows.
All right. So we'll go to the public. Anybody in the public wish to comment on resolution number 061314, delegation of signature authority? Okay, seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board for questions, discussions. Okay. And Marilyn.
I'd just like to move approval of resolution number 061314, delegation of signature authority.
Okay.
I'll second.
All right, any further discussion or comment, Mark?
Yeah.
I'd just like to say, having worked with Kristen at the county office for about 8 years, I'm really glad to see her with us, and I think this would be, this works out great.
And it's okay for her to have this authority?
Yeah.
Okay. A questionable testimonial at best, but we appreciate it. Okay, this will be a roll call vote. Mrs. Holmes.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you, Mark.
Mrs. Sheffer. Mr. Questenberry.
Yes.
Mr. Millar. Mr. Unger. Mr. Buckman. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Passes 7-0.
And next we'll move on to the superintendent's recommendation regarding accelerated learning. Dr. Prater.
Testing, good. President Millar and members of the board, the intent of this discussion item, action item, is to share my final recommendations based on the findings of the Accelerated Learning Committee's work presented during our last meeting. Before I get started, I would like to share my appreciation and gratitude to the following people and groups. Stephanie Medina from Creative Mediations. As facilitator, she did a fantastic job of managing a large, divergent group through challenging terrain over a series of several months. Cox Communications, Dave and Maggie Cox, along with Courtney Mesnerick, for their guidance and insights in helping us maintain open and transparent communications. Dr. Crocker and the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education for donating a meeting room and providing a safe, neutral environment for discussions to take place. Janet Crabb for crafting clear and accurate minutes of each meeting, allowing for transparency and understanding. All 18 members from the Accelerated Learning Committee who volunteered their time from June to October for this important endeavor, one that will undoubtedly improve learning in our school district in the years to come. This task was neither pleasant nor easy, and I want to thank each and every one of them. I want to thank members of the San Luis Coastal community who have weighed in over the last several months. Their input was valuable. And finally, I want to acknowledge you, the Board of Trustees, for your patience while allowing this process to unfold with integrity, an open mind, and transparency. You have each demonstrated poise and a willingness to tackle this complex issue. I think it's worthwhile to review the committee's charge. I ask the committee to do the following. 1. Provide insights, suggestions, and innovative recommendations to improve our initiative on meeting the needs of accelerated learners in our school district. This initiative is critical for our district to become truly great for all students. We have very bright, capable, and committed students attending our schools, and ensuring their academic and social needs are met is a moral imperative. I want you to be bold. I want you to hear your best thinking in this area. I refer to this task as program. The second task, we have two very popular schools sharing support systems for our most vulnerable learners. This recommendation will serve to define, improve, and enrich opportunities for advanced learners across the district, as well as to provide additional learning opportunities and tools for all students in San Luis Coastal. Schools and identity. All of our schools in San Luis Coastal have developed unique cultures and identities. Teach School was created in 1986 as an alternative school for advanced, motivated learners. Since that time, Teach School's enrollment has ebbed and flowed, However, it has remained a viable and worthwhile learning option for parents of 4th through 6th graders. Due to budget concerns in 2001, Teach School was moved to Bishop's Peak and has shared the campus since that time. Both schools are popular with families, and the campus has since become impacted. In order for both schools to reach their full potential, it seems reasonable to offer them their own sites. The recommendations from ALC. The recommendations submitted by the Accelerated Learning Committee reflect a desire and need to improve learning opportunities for advanced or motivated learners at our neighborhood schools, as well as provide Teach School with its own school site identity. Both of these recommendations serve a specific purpose. One, all means all. And two, maintaining parent choice in San Luis Coastal is clearly a value. Finally, cost. Running a school is expensive. There's no other way around it. The recommendations from the Accelerated Learning Committee are important, and I believe there is general alignment with the district's strategic initiatives for student success adopted in April 2011. The recommendation to move Teach School and to provide them with their own campus is costly. However, it will have an immediate and positive impact upon both Bishop's Peak and Teach Schools in terms of culture and identity. Now on to my recommendation. It is my recommendation to the Board of Education that the following measures be taken to address program needs of accelerated learners in San Luis Coastal, as well as capacity concerns at Bishop's Peak Teach Campus. The first recommendation, program. Implement the Accelerated Learning Committee recommendations for question one with a specific focus on one-to-one technology devices in grades 3 through 6, defined enrichment curriculum for advanced learners, and professional development of staff, especially in the areas of mathematics. Pending your approval tonight, I will move this particular recommendation forward as a priority in the Local Control Accountability Plan, the LCAP, which you heard about earlier tonight, process this winter and spring. It should be noted that this type of recommendation is really a programmatic recommendation, which needs to go through a filter of key stakeholders, and it needs to be clearly vetted under the law. And so we have a process that we're unfolding. We're beginning that in December and January. And we will ensure that lots of eyes look at this, but I will ensure that this becomes a clearly denoted priority. The second recommendation is capacity. It is my recommendation to relocate Teach School to the highlighted locations of the Grand Avenue campus, or Old Pacheco, starting in the 2014-15 school year. Teach School will maintain its current grade configuration and will need to share this location with existing tenants. I do not envision the need for a lottery system in the coming year, as there is sufficient room for growth if necessary. My rationale in this decision is that moving Teach School to its own location will allow our team to explore innovative possibilities and a vision into the future, especially with such close proximity to Cal Poly. With Bishop's Peak School reclaiming its full campus, there is an opportunity for them to envision program opportunities and innovation in grades K to 6. In both cases, it will allow space for growth and educational diversity among its student body. The cost. Ongoing costs for this recommendation are approximately $200,000. One-time costs to refurbish the site are approximately $160,000 and would come from the deferred maintenance budget. Finally, I believe this recommendation will shift the predominant focus from preservation and or elimination to inspiration and innovation, which will allow our students, district, and community to thrive well.
There's three lights, yeah. And that'll tell you When you're running out of your 3 minutes.
Can you hear me? Oh,
yes, we can hear you.
Hi. My name is actually Kylie Jacobson, and I'm here representing my preschool. I currently lease 2 classroom spaces from Pacheco Elementary School, and I've been in that location for 4 years now. And I have 55 families that bring their 2 to 5-year-olds to my school, and I was given the opportunity to move into the school district, and my business has been thriving and growing, and weekly I'm given phone calls from new enrollments, and just currently have been given notice that we need to vacate by June, and I just wanted to make sure that my school wasn't pushed off aside, and how important early childhood education is, so that our students can hopefully one day be at Teach. Ryan actually spoke with me and was informing me that we will be relocated somewhere in SLO, and nothing's been locked in, but I just wanted to voice that I hope my school isn't pushed off the side and that we would be relocated. And the school district, the setup that they've given us with the playground space and the classrooms, you know, that's tough for me to find a new spot to relocate due to the city and state requirements. And I've really enjoyed having the opportunity to work with the school district and given the classroom space. And I have room for growth, and if you give me the classroom space, I'm ready to grow. But now being given the notice to leave, I'm not sure what we're supposed to do about that. So I hope that we are kept in mind and we'll be able to relocate. That's it.
Thank you. I know staff is working on trying to find space for folks who are going to be displaced because of this move. Okay, thank you.
Kenneth Moore, please.
Thank you. Good evening, members of the school board. I appreciate the opportunity to address Dr. Prater's recommendation on moving Teach School to the old Pacheco campus on Grand Avenue. My name is Kenneth Moore. I'm the chairman of the board of San Luis Obispo Classical Academy. We will be the remaining tenant on the property. You will also hear this evening from our school's executive director, Dr. Susan Thule. Plato is rumored to have said that a good decision is based on knowledge and not necessarily on numbers. Our hope is that Dr. Thule and I can increase your knowledge of the issues at hand, including numbers, perhaps not the numbers Plato was referring to, so that the school board can make the best and informed decision. We've appreciated our good working relationship with the school district and hope to continue to do so. As Dr. Thule will point out, there will be challenges to the Classical Academy's program and to Teach with a shared campus, and we want everyone to approach these challenges with an open mind and eye. Dr. Prater's recommendation includes reducing the number of classrooms that we now rent by 1 and also would limit, if not eliminate, our use of the multipurpose room. This represents lost rent to the district of approximately $41,000 per year. This will require that we shrink the size of our school, which will have a financial and social impact on our community. If we discuss only the loss of the single classroom, that likely will translate into the loss of 32 of our students and some $165,000 in program income. If we cannot maintain our current level of usage of the multipurpose room, the cuts to our program will be far steeper. Our board will be faced with the difficult questions of which children to cut and which educators to fire. The ripple effect of these program cuts will be far-reaching, particularly since we are a school in a growth mode. Dr. Prater's recommendation would freeze that growth. As Dr. Thule will discuss, since first moving to the old Pacheco campus, we have frequently asked Russell Miller and Jeff Guy for more space. We looked forward to continuing this trend with Ryan, who's taken over. In fact, I can envision occupying the entire Pacheco campus in the not-too-distant future, and we would love to discuss a long-term lease for the entire campus. If we are forced into finding another location because our growth cannot be accommodated on-site, the district will lose our annual rent of approximately $225,000. However, I do not want to sound wholly negative on the proposal. I can see significant positives and synergies in both schools being located at Grand Avenue, We do believe, however, that Dr. Prater's recommendation can be improved to prevent the loss of classroom space to us and give both schools a head start in dealing with some operational issues that Dr. Thule will identify. It should be noted that our agreement is required to implement Dr. Prater's recommendation because we do have hallways are shared and we like to avoid as much as possible the mixing of the students. We think that this realigned proposal is significantly beneficial to both campuses. Teach maintains the number of classrooms in Dr. Prater's recommendation. We retain the number of classrooms we presently have, and we limit the mixing of students in the halls with a more easily controlled student flow with the realigned split. The district also retains the income from our rental of both the multipurpose room, if we can work out a shared use arrangement with that, and the one classroom. So we look forward to continued dialogue with the district as you move forward with this discussion. And thank you for your thoughtful consideration.
Mary Jo Devitt, and then Nancy Lewis. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. That should be Susan, Dr. Thule, and then Mary Jo.
Good evening. My name is Susie Thule, and I'm the executive director at San Luis Obispo Classical Academy. Appreciate the opportunity to share our thoughts about the proposed move of Teach to the El Pacheco site that we currently lease for the district. I know that decisions that affect so many very invested people can be difficult to make. Moving Teach onto the El Pacheco site is not ideal for us in several ways. However, we are prepared to work with the district and attempt to make the most of whatever decision is made. We have worked very hard at and have appreciated our longstanding relationship with the district, and we intend to continue this history forward into the future. We know that with Teach comes a community of very caring parents and hardworking students, and that all of us, you the board, the Teach community, and our community care deeply about educating children as well. The concerns I'd like to touch on with the board tonight have nothing to do with the Teach community itself, but rather with practical concerns that will affect both schools on a daily basis. Sloka has been in business for 9.5 years and renting space at the El Pacheco for 9 of those years. During that time, we have grown to serve 300 students, 240 families. We serve families with students from preschool through high school, and they come from all over the county. By working with Jeff Guy and Russell Miller, at times begging, we have been able to utilize more and more of the classroom and office space on that campus. We are still growing and expect this growth to continue. The primary concern I really want to highlight tonight is one that increases liability for all parties involved. While Teach now shares a campus with another slow coastal public school, with the proposed move, we mix public and private schools. We aren't really sure what this will mean, and so I want to just lay out a few thoughts. My understanding is that Teach has about 130 students and that it desires to grow. With our population as it stands currently, we will have 430-plus students sharing that campus, the hallways, the fields, the playgrounds, the blacktops, the bathrooms, the parking lots, etc. There will be an intermingling of Sloka kids and Teach kids, and there will be a whole lot more kids on campus. Right now, the tenants we share the campus with have far fewer students there at a time, and it is very easy to tell who is who. But with 430-plus kids, how do we clearly distinguish who is who? That's going to be much harder to do. How to provide good oversight of these students when some are the responsibility of Teach and others of Slo Classical Academy? As a campus with both public and private school populations, how do we provide clear security when rules are different, expectations are different, when the campus is open and there are that many kids to oversee? There will inevitably be issues with space, the bathrooms, with kids rubbing shoulders, and there will be questions as to who belongs to who, when to intervene, and in ensuring proper oversight of all students. Who is ultimately responsible for their safety and their conduct? As we have grown, we have hired more eyes already to be outside watching carefully to keep our students safe. With more students on campus, we are expecting that need to increase on the campus once more. Whose responsibility is that, and at whose expense? Along related lines, we know that there Our issues of mixing groups, we've already had challenges on campus of who belongs in the bathroom and who doesn't, and where are kids and what's okay on the playground and what isn't. So we'd really like to just voice that we think that liability increases for both TEACH, the district, and for our school as well. We would like to be part of the solution, but we at least wanted to get our concerns on the table before a final decision is made. So we appreciate, again, your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Dr. Thiel.
Thank you. Mary Jo Devitt, San Luis Obispo. In 1983, I served on the committee for the original alternative program for our district. Gregory and Carolyn, our younger two children of the four we have, were students at what I prefer to call the real Pacheco instead of the old Pacheco. I think Romualdo Pacheco might like that himself. At any rate, the decision, but they have you fooled. So Esther Poodle was the one that had introduced me to the teacher. We're leaving the staff room, and she says, "Mary Jo, I can't believe you said that." She said, and she had Carolyn for first grade, and she had Gregory for first and second. And I said, "Esther, what do you say to somebody that says something like that? Do you, they appear to be bright children?" At any rate, we went through the 10 years, and, you know, when they closed Pacheco, they then moved the program to Bishop's Peak, and then it was moved back to Pacheco, and then when that was needed as a neighborhood school, it was moved to TEACH and what have you. So in 1993, I served as chair for the committee to evaluate and make recommendations for the program, which is how I met Mr. Millar, since his son's mother was the vice chair. And I don't know, did the board receive that report from that 1993? Okay, great. So anyway, it was every single bit of information that was presented had to be factual. That was very, very important to us. None of this, "I think," or "it might be," or "perhaps," or whatever. No, it was factual. And the program really was huge at one point. And I think with the excellent recommendations that Dr. Prater has made, it will continue to be. So thank you for your time.
Nancy Lewis, and I see two, I think, with your name on that. Is that possible?
No, that's my husband, and he's a doctor, so we have to excuse his writing.
Is it Danner?
Dan.
Dan, okay.
D-A-N.
Right. Thank you.
He writes, you know how prescriptions are. My name is Nancy Lewis, and my daughter is the owner of Love to Learn that's located at this location. And I also had a preschool for 25 years up in Atascadero. And the requirements of the city are very, very strict, and most preschools either are lucky enough to have the school district or they rent a church. So I wanted to let you know that we, Kylie and I, both have looked around for the sites that Ryan told us that we might be able to move the school to. And I wanted to let you know that I think that Lizzie Street is the best set up because it already has a Mommy and Me preschool set up there and isn't used all the time. And I also want the board to understand, I'm sure you all know, how important early childhood education is. And without it, you know, you have to start at ground zero in kindergarten. So that's what I wanted you to consider. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Dr. Danny Lewis.
Yeah, I can't believe you couldn't read my handwriting. It's unfortunate. I just wanted to comment on the capacity issue and kind of to start with the summary of my impression. I just don't feel that Pacheco is a good fit for TEACH school. I think one of the issues of capacity is that the two public schools sharing a campus seem to be crowding, and so you have TEACH plus Bishop's Peak, But at Pacheco, you would have a public and a private school not really solving the problem of overcrowding, because it would be crowded with both schools there, Classical Academy and Teach. I think that I kind of in my mind have an idea that I'm not real sure is true, but it was in the paper reflected that one of the problems at Bishop's Peak is that it's an open enrollment school, and that people from all over the community would be able to go there. And a simple solution, it would seem to me, would be to close open enrollment and make probably something you guys deal with a lot, but anyway, people going to school there who live near there and people who live far away going to schools in their neighborhoods. So I know that, you know, fiscal issues are a major consideration in all this, and it just seemed to me that that would be a less expensive and straightforward approach to dealing with the capacity issue. Short, still on the green light. And I really would like to see that yellow page later. I'm sure that was legible.
Well, Mr. Lewis, I was an English teacher for 36 years. Your last name is clearly legible. The first name does need work. Thank you.
...and managed to come to consensus on their recommendations. Tonight, Dr. Prater is presenting two recommendations which I believe demonstrate his sincerity in ensuring that the academic and social needs of our many bright, capable, and committed students are met by our district. The first recommendation will provide additional accelerated learning opportunities throughout our district. I have spent some time analyzing API test scores for our district and have found our district's similar school rankings to be a bit lacking. I have a report here I'll pass along. I have come to the conclusion that our current lack of accelerated opportunities must be contributing to this problem by not allowing all our children to achieve to their highest potential. I am hoping adopting this recommendation will help our district gain some ground in this regard. The second recommendation, to move Teach to the Grand Avenue campus, is a good fit and will give the school the opportunity to continue challenging and inspiring our motivated students to succeed, something it has been excelling at for almost three decades. I encourage you to make the investment in our students and our community by approving Dr. Prater's recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you.
And can I say just one more site thing to our friends here at SLOCA? I tried reaching out to you via email. Our community is very like-minded. If there's one thing we're good at, it's sharing, having done it for well over a decade now. So if we end up being on the same campus, we'll be happy to work with you and try to figure things out to a mutual beneficial purpose. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Rizzo. I currently have two children attending Teach School. And first, I want to thank your board, Dr. Prater, and the task force for putting a lot of time and energy into finding Teach a permanent home. Also, I'd like to say that I live in the Cal Poly neighborhood. I'm on Kentucky Street, so I know this neighborhood really well. And when I bought my house about 10 years ago, I was just hoping that the old Pacheco School would open up again and be a public school. And that's the hope of my neighbors as well, even though they've retired and their children are grown and raised in now the neighborhood. So hopefully Old Pacheco does eventually in our current and future become a public school again. So thank you for your recommendation.
Thank you. We have a request from Carolyn Neal.
Hi, I just wanted to mention that Teach is the Pacheco location is a great location for our coastal students. It's a much easier commute than the Lizzie campus. And also, just to remind the board that we are a public school district, and we need to look out for our public school students. And we need to be a good landlord, and we need to stick with our agreements to our tenants, But Dr. Prater's recommendation is thoughtful, open-minded, and I think it's the solution that needs to happen. Thank you.
That's all the requests we have to speak on this item. We'll go ahead and bring it back to the board for discussion. Catherine?
I would just like to take this opportunity to commend Dr. Prater on your recommendation. I feel that you've breathed life into the board's initiative for providing accelerated learning opportunities for all of our students. And with this recommendation, you show that we really truly do mean all means all. By doing that, you have created opportunities for students in our neighborhood schools to have the technology that they need to have accelerated learning opportunities. And also, you have preserved the right to choose for our parents and our students to choose an accelerated learning school magnet. Personally, I hold you in enormously high esteem for the way you've handled this, and you have my respect, and I hope that of everyone in our district as well as the community.
Okay. Marilyn?
Thank you. Just a couple of questions. The recommendation, Dr. Prater, for third through sixth grade one-to-one tablet devices, if we approve this tonight, are we committing the funds for that? Or are we approving it conceptually as where we would like to go?
The first recommendation, and I tried my best to make it as clear as I could, that first recommendation at the old Pacheco campus, in addition to that, and I'm talking about a secretary, I'm talking about supervision, I'm talking about aid support if necessary, custodian, that type of thing. In addition, it represents lost lease revenue that we're trying to make up in other ways, as you sort of heard tonight. We're trying to make this work across our district. So in addition to that, I'm asking for a one-time investment of $160,000 out of our deferred maintenance. And what that $160,000 represents is really to bring up to standard the portion of the old Pacheco campus that I'm designating as for Teach. So it brings it up to standard, and what I mean by that is new carpet, paint, updating the hardscape, repainting the parking lot in the loop.
Much as we did at Los Osos Middle School for the sixth grade program.
Just like we did at STEAM a year ago. I think it's fair to do that. Plus, we need to invest in some fencing along the field perimeter to ensure safety. And that's, in essence, that's. And then, of course, we have the infrastructure costs of technology, which are embedded in the $160,000. So tonight, I am asking for that financial commitment from the board. To get to your question on the first recommendation, which is technology, professional development, and curriculum, each of those things are exactly what the state has said to us in terms of those are the things we should be looking at under the Common Core funding that we've received. The state allocated $1.4 million to districts or to our district in Common Core funding, for which there are three purposes of that funding, which has to be spent within 2 years. Now, there's a Common Core plan, funding plan, that needs to be developed, which is why I'm not asking you to say yes to the $750,000 commitment tonight, because that has to go through a process, and we're in developing and designing that process. So the Common Core funding plan must include technology, instructional materials, and professional development. Those are the three criteria for using those funds. It should sound pretty familiar, okay, in terms of what I'm requesting across all of our elementary schools. It's appropriate, it's in alignment, but I don't want to get in front of the process, okay? What I am recommending is that with your approval tonight, I will then move those recommendations forward to the process, to the teams that are working on that, on those decisions, so they can see that it's a value of the superintendent, the Accelerated Learning Committee, and the board. And that's what I'm really effectively seeking your thumbs up on, this being a reasonable and thoughtfully designed plan for consideration and eventual funding.
Okay, thank you. I have stayed pretty much hands off the whole issue of accelerated learning and Teach School. I haven't attended any of the meetings because I wanted to let that process play out in its own way, and with the people that were selected to be involved. I think that the recommendation as it's come forward is excellent.
Thank you.
I think it meets the needs of the Teach community and the needs of learners district-wide, accelerated learners district-wide. So I'm very pleased with what the group was able to come up with, and I'm sure it wasn't easy because you had a lot of divergent views, and it was really fraught with a lot of feeling. And then you're taking what the group came up with and creating this recommendation out of it. I think those are all of my... I wish I had more questions. I feel like this has been such a big thing, and now it's distilled down into something that leaves me without a whole lot of questions. It's just very thoughtfully considered and well put forth. So thank you. That's my two cents, guys.
So a couple of things. Mr. Pinkerton, I know that you're working with the current tenants, but I would like your assurance that you will continue to work with them to assist them in meeting their needs, those who may be relocating and those who will be staying. So I'm sure you will be continuing to work with them, but tell me that. Whatever that means for who are accelerated learners, however they are identified or found, and that this program that be available to them, and as well as continuing to realize that accelerated learners together with all students can learn very well at their neighborhood school, wherever that may be, and that this is a program of choice, and I appreciate that. So thank you.
I'm going to start out with a statement, and then I have two questions if I can follow. I'm extremely excited that we have now got a recommendation that resolves the capacity issue at Bishop's Peak, which brought us all here tonight. I'm glad that we've resolved the issue of the location for Teach School, and we have a recommendation to resolve the issue, and that we have a recommendation that is very important to me, that the committee's ideas and strategies for all the accelerated learners in the district are addressed. The question that came up tonight for me is, and it was the Classical Academy's presentations, as we're sharing sites, and I don't know a lot about the charter requirements in terms of credentialing and fingerprinting, and so I'd like some information on that either tonight or in the future, and if we're going to be blocking some hallways, putting some walls up to keep the two campuses separate, Does that compromise safety in terms of fire and police and those kinds of things, and just a general evacuation?
Great questions. I will promise you and rest assured with the board, we will look at and we'll work with Slo Classical Academy and Teach to ensure in our district plan to ensure that all of those exact concerns factors are considered. So both organizations are clear, are feeling positive about their the safety of the kids and staff, I anticipate those and many more questions coming up in the next few months, and I fully expect our staff to hit it head on and work through those things.
Thanks. And I have one other question that came up, and I wish I thought of this sooner. As we're looking at the money to both implement the possible relocation of TEACH and the implementation of your recommendation on accelerated learners, we've got one-time money set aside for the accelerated part, accelerated learners. We've got ongoing money set aside for TEACH. And it's just my hope that we, as we build the budget, and we as the board, make sure that we have ongoing money to support the accelerated learning suggestions that are coming out of this as well. So I guess that's a statement, but if you can address it.
And I agree. I realize that the common core, that's the problem when we receive one-time dollars from the state of California. That it, perfectly stated, that's our dilemma. Whenever we get receive one-time money, we're educators. We have ongoing needs, and programs represent ongoing needs. So, yes. Technology, we know, has ongoing factors, cost factors. So when I'm making this recommendation, it's true that professional development can be scaled back or moved forward depending on what the budget looks like, what the needs are. Instructional materials, the same way. Technology, we're going to do the very best we can. I can tell you that we are wrestling right now with the device. You know, what is the best device to select, and what are the possibilities and potentials there? And those things are why we have a process. Okay.
Thank you. And I appreciate how you split this really into two pieces, Eric, the program and the capacity piece. And when I look at them, the capacity piece, I think, is what brought people out tonight and where their treasured TEACH school can go. And I'm going to absolutely support your recommendation to move it to the Pacheco campus. But I must say, I think the program piece is really the most important piece of what we're doing tonight and what we're talking about. It's my hope that as we move through more professional development and more understanding of what accelerated learners, not only on the TEACH campus but on our local schools, can get, that will affect all the other students too. And I'm particularly concerned about those, what I would almost call,
of commending the Accelerated Learning Committee and commending Dr. Prater for their efforts here. And I do want to share Chris's and Ellen's concern about access and equity in our programs. I think his point about program is very important. We may be solving the capacity issue, but it's, to me, paramount that we keep those things foremost when we are offering accelerated learning programs, even when we have difficulty identifying exactly what's an accelerated learner. And I've met accelerated learners in my Title I reading class. I've met accelerated learners in my EL classes when I taught those. I've met them in my honors English classes when I taught those. There are accelerated learners in many places and in some places where one would not think they are. So anyway, I too will endorse this recommendation.
When this campus underwent Measure A, this campus being Old Pacheco, what capacity was it built to? I believe it's 500.
I think its total capacity must have been close to 6 or 650. Is that right, Jeff? That's with the addition of additional portables. It's probably about 550 right now.
Okay. Yeah. So we did, Measure A, we built out elementary campuses to 500, and then we put in some pads and hard-wired for portables in addition. The reason I raise that is because assuming this recommendation goes forward, and it appears that it will, that looks like it'll put how many students approximately into Jesperson School?
Classical Academy.
No, this one. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh.
At Chris Jesperson School, we currently have 4 students, hopefully soon to be 7 students with a maximum number of 10.
So let's use 10. So we have 130 from Teach when this is approved. We have 10 in the Chris Jesperson program, and we have 300 in the Classical Academy. I know there's going to be impacts. I don't see this as a crowded campus situation. If you want to see some crowded campuses, we can set you on track to see those. However, I do admit that there are going to be issues. Yes, we do care about early childhood education. We've been making considerable investment in both pre-K and transitional kindergarten at some of our sites. We do understand the value of having learning-ready kindergartners show up. And having said that, when Mr. Unger and I voted to close campuses back in 2000, we knew that the day would come when some of these surplus properties would be needed for public education students. And yes, we do know we're a public education school district. And sometimes, as unpleasant and difficult as it may be, these priorities end up trumping other priorities. And as much as it bothers me that we have to displace some tenants, and I know that we don't want to lose your revenue, first of all, and we're not thrilled that this is happening to you, but we have to balance the overall situation and respond to the priorities as we see them. Having said that, the alternative proposal, well, let me start this way. What is the current arrangement with SLO Classical Academy vis-a-vis the multi-purpose building? What's the lease say?
The lease on the multi-purpose room is a month-to-month lease.
Okay. It's not contained in the overall lease to 2018. So with 30 days notice, essentially, you could reopen negotiations on how to use that.
That's how I understand it.
Okay. And we do have large campuses where it may be the same school, but they are sharing multi-purpose room as well. So I'm hoping, with due diligence and your understandable anxiety regarding this change, that and your willingness to work with us, and I know we don't want you to go anywhere, so I think we can work those things out. I am concerned about your alternative recommendation in that, as I understand it, the last portable to the south on the string of portables along Slack Street is really not in condition to house students. Oh, and it's also owned by the County Office of Education, with whom we have great cooperation. So not concerned about that. So I have some concerns about that alternative arrangement, even though I do appreciate you bringing it forward. I guess I can see the security issues in that you have a wide range of student ages, but I'm excited about the proposal. I would like to see Teach happy in a new home. I would like to see Bishop's Peak happy in their home. I do want to respond to the doctor's suggestion about open enrollment at Bishop's Peak. There's probably about 30 people in the audience who will discuss with you what's wrong with that idea. So. But the main thing is the open enrollment at Bishop's Peak drove enrollment at Teach. So by doing away with open enrollment at Bishop's Peak and leaving Teach there, it basically would cause Teach to wither in their attendance, and that's not acceptable. So it was an idea that was looked at and sort of rejected because it would have resulted in the Teach program basically running out of students coming in first, second, third grade and then being ready to transfer into the Teach program. I think this is a much more elegant solution to that problem. I regret the displacement of you folks, especially you folks who are in the business of child care. It's a valuable commodity, if you will, a valuable service that needs to be provided in this community, and we hope we can work that out. Having said that, I'm a little nervous about the first recommendation, and I'm glad we're just basically providing, I guess, confirming your approach to this process, because we've got a lot of kids in this in our schools, and if we're going to put electronic devices into their hands to enhance learning and education, then I think we really need to study it and make sure we do it right. And having said that, any further? We have a motion. Oh, sorry, Marilyn, go ahead.
Thank you. I think one of my questions was answered already, having to do with the portable on the south end, because I was wondering if we should be or if we would entertain consideration of the alternative configuration that was suggested by Slocast Classical Academy. But if we don't own that portable, then that doesn't work. Reconfiguring.
Oh, I don't need to point. You know, we're going to be meeting with the county on Monday, and we were going to address that portable and talk to Still Classical. So I didn't want to jump ahead into negotiations and working with Still Classical until the board made their decision. So if you make your decision tonight, we will then meet with them and try to work out the best scenario for both schools.
Okay, great. That was one question. Then a question for you or Mr. Guy. If the Measure A improvements to Pacheco included pads for a build-out to 600, do those portables represent the use of those pads? Or if not pads, Mr. Guy, you know, stub outs or whatever we've got for growth?
Currently, the site is built out to the capacity for the 600, 650 kids. When class size reduction was initiated, boom, you know, the school became at capacity even with the build out. So where there are fewer, it is because there are fewer students in the actual capacity, if I'm making sense there. It's at capacity.
So let me make sure I've got it. What we're seeing here, both the brick and mortar buildings, the portables, the multipurpose room, what have you, represents the full build out of that site.
Yes, it does.
And if we have 400, and we're looking at the potential for 440 students, we have growth of 160.
Yes, depending on how many kids per classroom.
Okay, so there is some potential for growth, but not a tremendous amount of potential for growth on that site as it is currently
yes.
Proposed to be used.
Yes, there's okay. Potential for growth.
Thank you.
Okay.
Let me just jump in for clarification. So let's say the Chris Jesperson program, it probably has space that would accommodate a greater number of students who are not special ed students. But this program seems to be limited to less than 10.
Yes. The Chris Jesperson site isn't something that we have ever had participation in with any capacity. It's always been a county-run building.
Right. My point is that even though there's a 600-student capacity, with as many tenants occupying the campus and potentially teach, you might have extra...
Priorities is a better word. I defer to you on that one. Okay, that's the end of my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just before we voted, I recognize the faces of several members of the Accelerated Learning Committee in the audience tonight, and I was just wondering if we could take a moment to let them stand so that we could recognize them. Please. Thank you for your service.
Thanks. Kim, could you repeat back the motion that was made? It's not a test.
The motion is to approve the superintendent's recommendation to relocate Teach School to the Old Pacheco campus in the spaces designated, subject to negotiations, and implement the program changes for accelerated learners as described in the agenda item.
Okay. And so if I can ask a question of staff. So some of the questions that were asked tonight are not necessarily covered by that, but they can be discussed and worked on after we do this motion. So interaction of kids and that type of stuff.
Yeah, I imagine that we'll come back to the board once we more solidify this, and I will highlight and outline each of those concerns that I know we all have.
Okay.
We'll enumerate them, and we'll talk about our plan, and that way we'll put a nice dressing on this.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay?
So, as I understand the first recommendation, we are basically, the motion is to approve recommendations 1 and 2. Recommendation 1 will be subject to the LCAP, thank you. I wanted to say FICMAT for some reason. And that the transfer of Teach School to the Pacheco campus and the configuration outlined in your recommendation. Okay. And while I appreciate the flexibility, staff is going to work with the other tenants of Classical Academy particularly, I do think that whatever adjustments are made, the unit integrity of both the Teach School and the Classical Academy needs to be maintained. That's essential to the individual school identification piece. So with that being said, any further comments or questions? Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. We'll take a 5-minute break.
Ah, Dr. Lewis?
Don't pick on him anymore.
Hey, Dr. Lewis? Dr. Lewis? He wanted to see it. I told him you...
I've been hearing from grumpy secondary administrators, but first we are going to... Oh, a cookie showed up on my desk. We're going to move on to the approval of secondary mathematics program. Mr. Robinette approaches.
Thanks. This is the third time the board will have seen this. Tonight we're asking the board to adopt a secondary mathematics continuum that is consistent with the National Common Core Standards. The standards themselves are researched, internationally benchmarked, and will apply a level of rigor while at the same time simplifying the amount of standards that a student is required to learn and be able to do each year. In mathematics, to me, this finally makes sense. Students in many other nations have been outpacing the United States consistently by focusing on less standards each year and not needing to review deeply embedded concepts and even not accelerating their most gifted students rapidly through mathematics. In many places, math is more like that requiring Algebra 1 for eighth graders in California was a failure, and we should learn from that experience. The second shift is about what is taking its place, a series of far more rigorous expectations in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, especially the 8th grade. So let me read from the actual framework document. As students enter eighth grade, they will have written and interpreted expressions, solved equations and inequalities, explored quantitative relationships between dependent and independent variables, and solved problems involving area, surface area, and volume. Area, surface area, and volume. Students will also have begun to develop an understanding of statistical thinking. So prior to eighth grade, students will be doing algebra, geometry, and probability and statistics. In grade 8, instructional time should focus on three critical areas, which is kind of interesting as opposed to the 18 that typically accompany a grade level in California. Those three areas are formulating and reasoning about expressions and equations, including modeling an association in bivariate data with a linear equation and solving linear equations and systems of linear equations. Number 2, grasping the concept of a function and using functions to describe quantitative relationships. And 3rd, analyzing 2 and 3-dimensional space and figures using distance, angle, similarity, and congruence, and applying the Pythagorean theorem. Those are all algebraic concepts, a little bit of geometry in there. So I looked up a model assessment today of what a test might look like for a student in 8th grade Common Core standards. And it was really fascinating. I won't put something on the wall, but it's fascinating because a student might maybe ask, and we're expecting to see this when we have our testing next year, they'll be given 3 data sets. So a data set might be a graph that has a line going upwards, what we would commonly refer to as a slope on a graph. They'll also have a second data set. They'll have a simple equation like y equals 55x. This is a simple equation. And we'll have a third data set, which will be a table with a bunch of numbers in it, two different columns of numbers, maybe a few missing, so students have to kind of fill in the blanks based on the progression they see. And the question they'll be asked is not a multiple choice question. They'll be asked to determine which of those three data sets is showing a faster rate of change. And so students will have to be able to look at data that they're comfortable with that is all really related to that simple idea of slope and finding which will become a faster rate of change based on the slope they find using any of those equations. It requires students to be really conversant in that and requires them to do that prior to taking Algebra 1. So it's a major change. With all of that said, we're asking the board to adopt a progression that still includes acceleration in the middle grade school years for those students who are truly ready. This will be determined by 2 tests. One is the MDTP, which is the Mathematics Diagnostic Testing Project, which has been designed and developed by the UCCSUs. It's what we use currently. The purpose is for screening. And then for those students who have a passing score on that, we'll take a skills test developed by the Silicon Valley Mathematics Initiative. This will indicate a student's ability to reason, to persevere, and to solve problems. Students who are accelerated in their abilities will be recommended to take a compacted math program in their middle school years. This is essentially taking 3 years of math in that 2-year 7th and 8th grade period. We recommend allowing a student to retake these tests prior to continuing or prior to the start of the school year if they don't pass them or want to take another shot at it. We also recommend not continuing our current practice of allowing a parent to waive these results and place their child in an accelerated program arbitrarily. We have no board policy. We have no administrative regulation on this matter, so it really is something that you can choose to weigh in on or not, I suppose. But it has been our past practice that we allow parents to virtually ignore these test results and teacher recommendations as a prerequisite and sign a waiver. I believe this is a disservice to the classroom teacher. And we have our teachers reporting that they are spending a lot of time remediating instead of truly accelerating. So we instead plan on instituting a parent appeal process that could allow exceptions, but that the final decision should rest with the site and with the school district. We fully recognize that we are in the middle of a massive change and that we are building as we're making this change. Our students will be tested under these new standards next year. You know I always do this. So we know we have to be careful as we do this. We recognize that we have elementary students and middle school students that are truly caught in the middle of this change. We have students, for example, in the fifth grade that are taking sixth grade who supports 100% this progression. In fact, he's endorsed it. But he also said acceleration is useful for a small minority of students, and their needs can be met through a variety of strategies. So allowing for an acceleration point in middle school and high school and providing several opportunities for math enrichment at all levels offers the district an opportunity to design and implement a 21st century K-12 math program that is globally responsible and effective. So we're asking for your approval tonight so we can move forward with course adoptions.
Thank you, Mr. Robinette. I think we have some questions of the public to speak on this matter.
Yes, we do. We have an Alexander Dektar or Dektire. You'll correct me on that, won't you?
Thank you very much. My name is Alexander Dektar. I am on the faculty of the Department of Computer Science at Cal Poly. I live in San Luis Obispo. I'm a parent of a San Luis Obispo High freshman and a Teach Elementary fourth grader. So while it does not really reflect on my older son, I would like to start with saying that as a member of the department, that's one of the big beneficiaries of the accelerated learning in the STEM disciplines, I want to kind of recognize the fact that the students who have the opportunity in the higher grades in the high school to accelerate, to take AP calculus, to pass through the entire sequence of the AP calculus, we are the main beneficiaries of the students being able to apply to the CSU system and to the UC system and to continue their careers in the STEM disciplines. As far as I understand this proposal, one of the major implications of it is that it's now going to be much harder for the students in their high school years to go through the AP progression to the point where either they will have to double down on the classes or they will have to take them in the summer. So I would like to respectfully ask the question, and I would like to suggest that perhaps there is a way to affect the changes in the middle school mathematics progression that does not jeopardize the ability of the San Luis Obispo District high school students to apply and be admitted to the universities in California, where their AP Calc scores and their ability to take the AP Calc is going to be looked at with high attention. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have anybody else who would like to speak to this item? Please come forward. And then I'd like to see if we can respond to the issue that was just raised.
Carolyn Neal, SSS. As I've talked to a lot of you about our college results, and I'm really concerned with this math progression that our students will not have as good a chance of getting into the UCs and the CSUs, just for what this gentleman said. When college admission officers, they'll look at our course list, and when they see that we have offered AP Calculus, but your student hasn't taken it, you're really looked down upon, and you probably won't get in a UC engineering program. So you need to be really careful. I'm thinking maybe summer school. Is that going to be an opportunity to take geometry maybe in summer school or Algebra 1? Maybe for some of these kids. I think like with the first and second graders, this is all going to be okay. It's as Mr. Robinette said, with these middle school and upper elementary grade students, it's going to be very difficult. And just talking to parents, I know I was shocked last year some of the students didn't get into Berkeley that were number six in their class and took AP Calculus. So it really is a dividing class for college admission.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak to the board on this item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back. And Dr. Prater, they're kind of overlapping concerns that were expressed by the last two speakers. If you could address those.
I do understand the comments that were made. I also feel that the document that we've put together, the progression document, if it's fully understood that an entire year, additional year of mathematics has been added with the Common Core State Standards to the middle grades, to eighth grade in particular. And so it becomes what people have historically seen as Algebra 1 out mathematical strands. When you get to the acceleration decision point at the end of sixth grade, what we're effectively requesting by your approval is that this will allow us to develop literally a new set of courses with units of study, the new standards, with assessments in seventh grade. So kids who are accelerated and demonstrate very strong acumen in mathematics can take that seventh and eighth grade compacted curriculum. It's 2 years of mathematics condensed into 1 year. That alone is extremely challenging. Moving then into eighth grade, they take Algebra 1, high school Algebra 1, which again is not the same Algebra 1 that we're accustomed to. Far more rigorous, far more challenging. Now, what students can do, if the concern is that they're, let's just say they aspire to UC Berkeley School of Engineering, I understand what was just said. I'm not in agreement with it. Based on what I've heard, is it's the level, it's the student's ability on their SATs to demonstrate not just that they've taken the rigorous courses, but they're actually, their scores reflect those, that level of understanding. And so our concern is many of our students are not getting that to that level of understanding that they need. Now, it doesn't mean that students can't get to AP Calculus. Or AP Calculus BC, the highest course we offer. And so what that means is, at the end of eighth grade, we're working, as we said last time, we're working on a scout program that's approved by the UC system for A through G credit that they can take effectively an online course over the summer between eighth and ninth grade in geometry, which would put them in Algebra 2 as a ninth grader. So by doing that, you're still on that trajectory without having to double down. Without having to double down, you're on that trajectory that students are on right now. The difference is, in our opinion, is this progression document sets our students up for better understanding, stronger foundation, and we believe a much greater chance of demonstrating their mastery, especially on those difficult exams that they have, placement exams they have to take in order to get into these high-level programs. I feel our students are, we're setting our students up, especially those that are ambitious, motivated, and really talented. There's a pathway here for them to take that will get them to the same place they're getting to now, but I believe in a much, much better way, more informed way, more confident way. That's my position on this document.
And Dr. Prater, the SATs, are they being modified to reflect this change in Common Core and the math progressions?
It's my understanding that the same person that's developing the SBAC assessment system in the state of California is also involved developing the SAT changes, which we know the admissions for UCs and CSUs, the top schools, they look at those very carefully. So you can expect Common Core type problems that we're seeing in Algebra 1 and Algebra 2, and certainly on up to pre-calculus and calculus. Those types of questions and problems will be revealed on the SAT, for which our kids are having to compete with in their junior year. Leading into their application process. So from my perspective, this document gives the students in our school district, if we design this correctly with the curriculum and the math units and the assessments aligned to Common Core, it will prepare our students. Now, I realize that we have some grandfathering and we have some kids that are sort of caught. I learned today specifically that we have a group of kids. I didn't learn this today, but I saw an email concerning that today, regarding fifth grade student who's getting straight A's in a sixth grade math class right now in our district. He or she is probably one of 20 students in our district, maybe 30, that are in that situation. We do not want a situation where next year that child has to take sixth grade math again that he just got an A in. That's not our interest. So as Mr. Robinette said, you know, developing a modified, individualized curriculum or experience for mathematics for children in that domain is important to us, but it's not going to be the norm as we move through this over the next and get through this and refine it over the next several years. So with all due respect, I believe this document will provide our
new Common Core standards, distill that down to five or six. And I think we're going to have better success with students learning that material deeply so they're not repeating it. The cycle in American education has been so often, okay, now summer's over, let's come back and let's review all the things you learned last year, and then we'll start kind of scaffolding and learning some new things instead of, you have this stuff, that stuff's wired, here's the new material. And it's interesting if you look at the math progression. I think we have, you know, a very small number of students out of the, you know, 500, 400 or so students we graduate from high school who take Calculus BC currently. I actually hope we'll have more students taking Calculus BC under this progression because they're going to be so much more prepared for that class if they're an accelerated student, if they're a student that's going to go that far. And Calculus BC is certainly not required to get into a competitive college. It's certainly not an expectation to get into a competitive school. In fact, the failure rate in American universities is about 25% for students who pass AP Calculus and then take college Calculus. So it just tells us again we have to do a better job of depth in math, and I think we're going to get to that this way.
I asked you that question because I thought that was the answer you were going to give, because I support this idea of this math progression, because I've had two students now go through our math program with the same goal in mind that the parents who talked tonight had, which is that you have to get those, you have to have those classes on your transcript. And what I found is that while they got through the programs that the various levels, they were climbing this ladder, but there was very little foundation to the ladder, and it was got a little very wobbly at times, and you end up with a math tutor as a permanent fixture in your kitchen for 4 years. And I think what we're going to avoid is that with our families having this depth of knowledge of mathematics. So I'm very much in favor of this.
I have a couple of questions. One is, again, students will have the opportunity to take tests in order to accelerate. I'm very sympathetic with our teachers who have had students in their classrooms who's either the student or the parents believe that the student needs to be in that level to in order to have it on the transcript. And I think that what we're striving for is student success and actual achievement in this in this subject area, which is changing so much. I too have had the experience both myself and with others of having students go through the math program here, and it's not a reflection on our high schools as much as in California, because I've heard it from other people in other from other districts, and then get to college and say, "Wow, I aced math all the way through, and now I'm failing." So I think that that our goal is an actual deeper understanding. Now, having said that, we're not creating this math progression in any sort of vacuum. I mean, other districts across the state and because of Common Core across the country are doing this. So we haven't made this up wholesale as something that we think might work for us. There's a lot of research backing this up. There are other districts going through the same struggles that we're going through right now as a result of, and I would say not just Common Core, but our desire to have our students have a deeper understanding of mathematics. So I want to be clear that this is something we're doing in response to Common Core, but also it's my understanding we're doing it because it's going to be really good for our students. So there's a lot of research backing this up. I've been kind of following it in some of the other states, New York, other states that have been implementing Common Core to a greater extent than we have. And I haven't looked at individual math progressions, but I know that the results are beginning to be felt. So I just want to be clear, have an understanding out there that this is not something we're making up. We're trying to come up with doing the research and the homework to put in place what will ensure student success in a changing framework, a changing educational framework.
I think just one comment, because I don't know if there's an actual question there, but one comment I would make is that the National Common Core standards really have grade-aligned standards from kindergarten through eighth grade before high school because they're grade-level standards, K-8. So that's about 30% of the state is reporting that right now. We'll see what happens. I think that in some ways, I think we're a little ahead of the curve on adoption because we're taking this stuff pretty seriously, knowing our students are going to be tested on this next year and field tested this year. This seems to make sense to our educators. It seems to make sense to the people that have looked at it and people that we're consulting with, college professors. So that's why we're doing it. But I truly, you're going to see different pathways, I think, in different places. But truly also, there are kindergarten, first, second, third, et cetera, standards all the way up to eighth grade that all students are supposed to master.
So some thoughts build upon what Ellen is saying and what some of the comments are out here. First of all, I think we're at a Sputnik moment again. And that's based on the fact that the businesses, the governors, and the universities have basically said, we're not doing as well on the international exams. And it was Russia sending something up into space that made us jump on all of this the last time. I think we're jumping all on board again. And I think part of the key to this is that the universities drove, to a large extent, the creation of the Common Core. And if this is Common Core, then this is coming out of the university system. One of their complaints was, as I understand it, after doing some reading, it's much too much remediation. Our students were getting to college and then being stuck in remediation classes, primarily in the STEM programs. So my question then comes down to, because I haven't seen this and I don't know the answer to this, is universities were involved in the creation. Universities are upset with the amount of remediation, or at least disappointed. So it would make sense to me, but that universities are going to change their admission standards to go along with this. I mean, they sparked all this.
Well, we base almost all of our thinking about university admissions on the UCCSU A through Gs. So currently, in the area of mathematics, students need to attain Algebra 2. That's the G or the C requirement of the A through Gs. They have to have passed Algebra 2. So that's going to happen in this progression. It's happening currently. Competitive students, though, are probably expected to go beyond that, especially for the more, the UCs over the CSUs and the more prestigious UCs or privates. And so what I've always been told, past days as a high school counselor person, is that you want to see students taking a progressively more rigorous curriculum as they progress, especially through their junior year. Senior year doesn't matter that much. I mean, typically those don't matter as much on transcripts. Those sophomore and junior transcripts are super important. And so I guess my thinking is, as long as any student on that progression is going to get to Algebra 2, at least, and which is easily done, and is going to be taking a progressively more rigorous program, that they should be fine under this standard or under the one we had, I think. But I'm not a college admissions person, and so I hope they come along as this happens. So.
Anybody want to make a motion on this one?
I'll move to accept to approve the secondary mathematics progression as presented.
I'd be happy to second that.
All right. We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Buckman. Any further discussion or questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Thank you. And we will move on for all those secondary administrators out there in the audience to the approval of secondary single plans for student achievement. Kim.
So each year the board is, Each year the board is presented with the single plans for student achievement for the five secondary schools. A copy of each plan was submitted to you previously. School site councils for each school have already approved these plans. A few of the secondary principals are here this evening, although we have many at conferences and with other obligations this evening. So tonight I ask for your approval of the five secondary single school plans.
Thank you. Anybody from the public want to speak to this? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board. I just feel an obligation to ask questions of every single one of you out there after all this time and waiting. And so,
ask Mr. Pruitt many of them.
Mr. Marinello, what's on page 7 of your... anyway, thank you. Chris?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I appreciate how these school site plans align with the initiatives. Thank you.
And I just want to show my appreciation to the various school sites in producing this. It's a lot to wade through. I know that a lot of those things can just be plugged in, but I know that it was taken very seriously and they worked very hard on it. So I want to thank the site administrators and the people that worked on it at the various sites and the input by parents and so forth.
I'd like to echo those sentiments as a veteran of the elementary level single plans for student success. I'm not sure that was what they were called back then, but it is a pretty arduous process. And I do want to comment on the names you see from each one of the sites as being involved in it. And
so that they can get help with their getting their credits up. And this is the sort of, I don't want to use this phrase, but thinking outside the box kind of stuff that I think really made this a fun document to read.
You want to take Mrs. Sheffer first?
Mrs. Roger wants you to take Mrs. Sheffer first.
You're so in demand, Mr. Millar. You want to take me? Okay. I too appreciate the hard work that went into the formation of these plans on the parts of the principals and staffs at the high schools, and I'm hopeful that you'll be able to achieve the goals that you've set forth for yourselves. And that said, I'll move approval of secondary single plans for student achievement for 2013-14.
Thank you, Marilyn. And now we'll go to Ellen.
I'll second that, but first I would also like to indicate that I think we talk a lot about opportunity, wanting more involvement by the community, by others in our schools, and there things like this provide such a great learning experience for people who are parents or PTA people or community members to gain an understanding of how things work at financially, programmatically, academically, socially, on all levels at the schools. And I think, like Mr. Millar, I was involved on school site council, elementary through high school, and found that the opportunities to learn how the district worked and gain that insight was so interesting and informative, and I think not just helped me as a parent, but to be a better citizen in our community. So I think that and also these provide great touchstones for accountability. So thank you.
And Dr. Prater, I think we should let the staff come in at 7 tomorrow since they've been here so late. So I didn't want to go too late because it might get me in trouble. Any further discussion on this item? We have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. And thank you all for being here, and thank you all for your hard work. Thanks, Kim. Go home. No, that's right. You can't. Oh, not so fast. All right. Oh. The approval of the, we'll move on to 9.04, which is the approval to pursue elementary Wi-Fi infrastructure.
So since we're talking about technology, I have a little technology to spice it up. So being the last item, I'll hold your attention here, I hope. So this evening I want to talk about technology, and in particular elementary Wi-Fi. So I think I have the clicker, huh? We want to put the tea in steam tonight. Thanks for the chuckle, Amy. So we have our two initiatives that this addresses. We have Initiative 8, Classrooms of the Future, as well as Initiative 5, Developing a World-Class Program for STEAM. So both of this, you know, proving elementary Wi-Fi does address both of these, and as was brought forward tonight, also thinking about All Means All, it also would help with that initiative as well. Elementary sites have met and have appointments to meet with most elementary sites. And I think currently we have principals, we have teachers, we have parent groups, we have individual parents, we have technology committees at the site level that are really hungry to look to see how can they use technology to benefit our students. And right now, without Wi-Fi being installed, it's really putting a halt to any progression that the sites could make, because currently they have maxed out what their infrastructure can handle. So what does Wi-Fi provide per site? So here's a little visual. So if you start down here at the bottom, picture one green box is a symbol of one classroom. So if you have a student that wants to be on the laptop or use any other device, you have an access point. One access point. Currently at the middle schools, we have installed one access point for every two classrooms. So that access point gives the ability for someone to be able to log in. But then that wiring has to go back to an IDF cabinet within the school. What could this look like for us? But we're unable to use it without that infrastructure being in place. Here's a little before and after. You're supposed to be able to see all the rust on the before picture, and then this is the after beautiful picture from the middle school. So just gives you a visual of what we're talking about. So the site cost and what it actually buys. So when you start thinking about what does this mean per site, what does that buy? Here on the list left, you have the whole list of all that is entailed, all the details and the components of what's needed in order to install Wi-Fi. I gave one elementary example, although currently you have to keep in mind that, of course, every elementary, the setup is so different that the cost varies greatly depending on how spread out the elementary school is, what the ceilings are composed of, how high this, construction needs to go, that type of thing. So you can't say it costs this much per site. Okay. Also, this would require a bid process. This would require construction. So there's variables in there that we need to be able to take the time to really look at the details. So this is an estimate at this point. So approximately it would take about $75,000 for an infrastructure cost, about $18,000 for the fiber, for the chassis, for the cabinets, that MDF, IDF portion that I showed you, and then about $32,000 for construction. So what that means is construction company coming in, running two wires, for example in here, to a wall or to the ceiling, so that then the access point could distribute the capability to be able to use devices in this room.
Kim?
Yes.
So this last portion that you're discussing, the idiosyncrasies, the differences between the sites, too late for big words. Where are we in conjunction with the facility study we've approved, and will that study inform the Wi-Fi installation at the sites?
My understanding is that will have to be a separate process, that this is in particular a construction company walking around room to room and looking at the cabinets, looking at where would we put that access point, what construction would be required, is this a drop-down ceiling, is this a concrete wall, what's going to be required for that. So it's a construction process, I think, that would be handled separately, if I understand the...
Yeah, so the facility master plan is going to be something that they go through, they look at sites, they look at facility needs, and Wi-Fi could be one of the things that comes out of the facility master plan at all of our sites. I think that's the twofold reason why we're kind of bringing elementary first, because I don't see us doing major modernization at our elementary sites per se, not that there won't be some needs, those types of things, but most of our elementary sites were touched through that Measure A process prior, and I think at the high schools where a majority of the needs are going to be in the future when that facility study comes out, but we'll see in the end what that looks like. And then also, to be honest with you, and Kim can attest to this as we go to sites, the elementaries are probably more hungry for technology and machines and using right now than even at our secondary sites, which was very different than where we thought we would be a few years ago.
Thanks. So there's not a whole lot of our current infrastructure that we have that was wired in, 12 years ago, that's really usable. Most of it, other than our fiber optic system, the larger fiber optic system. So we're going to have to...
It's all usable. It's all
usable, but I mean, it's not...
Plugging computers into the wall, having classroom use. I mean, all of our classrooms are outfitted for a certain number of computers, those types
right.
of things, but not Wi-Fi.
Right.
I mean, when the mobility issue came up, when we talked about computers in the future and e-books and those types of things, and so that mobility aspect is going to be tied to having Wi-Fi available.
Okay.
Talking about the Acceleration Committee's recommendation, as we heard again repeated this evening, one of the recommendations is that we could use technology as a resource to be able to address the needs of accelerated students. One of the recommendations was to, provide each third through sixth grade student with a device. Currently, we're not prepared to be able to hand a device. First, we need time to study what's best. What do we want it, purpose do we want it to serve? What device serves that purpose the best? But even if tomorrow we had devices for every third through sixth grader, they wouldn't be able to function.
I'd be able to write on this and explain what they were working on. And again, from a remote spot in the classroom, as opposed to always needing to be up here in the front to talk to the students.
Is it sticking? Okay, so what will this allow us to collaborate? And you're going to see an example of that here in a minute, and be able to work on a project together. Technology allows them to be able to create, to be able to collaborate, and to be able to put their minds together to serve a really 21st century type of purpose, like creating a presentation, right? Instead of on a poster board or, holding up something like this, something that we would be doing, like myself, in real life. Promoting digital literacy. Digital literacy is now a standard that we're asked to teach students. So without technology in their hands, we're not going to be able to teach digital literacy near as well. Be ready for the SBAC assessment. So students beginning next year, and even with field testing this year, are going to be required to take their assessments online. Obviously, we don't want the first time that they use a tool and are really comfortable with it being when they go to take the assessment. We want students to be able to, you know, be completely comfortable with it and be able to drag and drop and research and read something and manipulate a computer and be really comfortable with it. We would never want the device or the lack of technology experience to get in the way of their performance and to be able to instead really see a picture of what they understand. And engage, motivate, inspire. I think all of us have seen the examples when you see, you know, their eyes light up and, you know, it creates a different level of engagement. You know, we watch students that a light bulb goes on and you can grab a student and you can really inspire them with the capabilities that technology can do for them. And finally, to be prepared for the 21st century. It's the world that they're walking into and we need to do our part to prepare them for that.
How to do a problem. You can see it's going to record my writing. You can even hear my voice in the background. So students can watch this video. They can just watch it as many times as they want. It's been very helpful.
Three equals 19
is correct. Number 12
is actually what, Thomas?
567.
567.
Everything that the six subjects that I could for my slides, and I like have it up so it's like one half I can easily work on there while reading it.
I'm reading one of the textbooks from Mr. Thompson's online, you know, little website.
You want an exciting game that will get boys? That's why you should try our game, Lion Chase. It's exciting, fun, and easy to learn.
We want to play.
I see a really well-organized paper over at Malia's desk. So Malia is going to point and discuss her journal entries.
I took this leaf and I put it right here. And I took this leaf and put it right there. And then I'm going to set 5x3 array with equals 15.
Okay.
And then I'm going to put it right here. And then I'm going to put it right here. So that's 15.
So it's just a little window into what students can do with technology. And I think this is the district that wants to be a part of encouraging students to do innovative and progressive and really critical thinking and creative collaborative opportunities. And Wi-Fi would allow some of those opportunities. I also want to say a quick thank you. This was really a collaborative.
It'll be current by the time we actually do get
one-to-one in our elementary students' hands. Is there something that can be done maybe on a modified version so when we have maybe tablets in our teachers' hands, they can use them in the classroom? But I'm just concerned that there's a lot of money going out and it might not be used for a very long time. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. What about that, Dr. Prater?
I can respond, but you seem to be on a roll tonight, Ms. McGrath. So,
We actually considered this because there are some sites that, for example, have asked for one iPad with Apple TV and Doceri, so that in the last elementary example there, where the teacher was using the iPad to be able to mirror what was happening on the screen and be able to walk around and show. And so we actually had one construction company say, just tell us what that would cost. Let's see if we could start lower with a plan B, right? And let's see if instead of going full-blown and doing, you know, full saturation, is there a way we could, do something in the meantime, a more temporary solution so that we're not, wasting that. As they did that estimate, you're not saving anything because every classroom still needs access, right? So you still have to have it flood Wi-Fi in order for that teacher. So we were hoping to see if there was a better solution, and what we found is you're paying for two people, for a crew to come out and to run two wires. So while you're there, it's much cheaper just to go ahead and finish that out. So I think what we'll find is we don't have a solid plan in place for one-to-one right now, right? And what we also find is that this process will take time. Okay, it will take time to go to bid. It will take time for construction. There are a lot of sites that are hungry. And so we're working to create what would those devices look like? What are you trying to accomplish? What would serve your purpose? And not to be hasty about that decision, but to really be thoughtful and to think that out and to make smart decisions. But right now, we're holding back progress. And people are hungry for it, and elementaries are clamoring for it. And without it being in place, they can't even begin to take the first step.
Is it in creating the specifications for bids for Wi-Fi, is it possible for those specifications to essentially be aimed at the one-to-one ultimate utilization on the campuses? Now, I know technology will change and capacities will increase, but is that part of what we're looking at when we go out to bid on this?
Right. That's what we've communicated is, let's assume that we would get to that one day. But what we also want to do is we want to start with the people that are hungry for it, that are comfortable with it and know what to do with it. There are some teachers that are saying, give it to me, put it in my hands, right? They want to be able to do great things for kids and to be able to ignite fires with the teachers around them. There are some teachers that are not comfortable with it right now. And so we want to be able to take a process so that people understand what to do with it and so that it is a useful tool. We have no desire to put one-to-one in people's hands that, they could be having amazing instruction without technology, but there's some people that could see, look what this could do. And I think give the opportunity for us to roll it out in a way that ignites fires with people and that creates a passion, creates an interest, and creates a hunger for it.
And I sense that, I'm sorry, I missed your last name, but I sense that Lori has other inputs. And could I ask that staff make sure that we are able to communicate with her and listen to her concerns and ideas about this?
Be happy to follow up and love the input.
Great. Thank you. Other board member questions or comments? Chris?
Yeah, and I was the one that asked the question last time about what our plans were. And after talking to Dr. Prater and thinking about this, I think this is field of dreams. If you build it, they will come. and as I've been thinking about your comments about the SBAC and what is one-to-one computing going to look like for our students, it's clear that in order for it to work, in what I think and what I read is the future of computing, which is not the laptop with everything on it, but things up in the sky and the cloud. That means you must have the ability to get online and to connect. It's a lot of money. I never thought I'd be in a in a place where I'd say let's spend $1 million, but I will support this. I think it's a necessary step for what we have to do.
I agree with Chris, and I'd like to remind everybody that we are putting $1 million back into the budget that we took out because we had to. And I want to be ready for the 21st century because I think it's already
here. I think you're right.
Move that we approve the nomination for Mark to have his name put forward to the other school districts.
I'll second that.
Is there anybody in the public who does not believe this marriage should go forward? So, speak now. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. Anybody want to interrogate Mr. Buckman about any of his agenda? Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And one abstention. You humble person, you. And Mark, thank you for your willingness to continue your service. We appreciate it very much. Okay. All right, we'll move on to the action consent agenda. Let me know if you want something pulled. 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, disposition of surplus property. 10.03, acceptance of donations. 10.04, approval of furniture and equipment request pulled. And 10.05, approval of purchase orders. I'll accept a motion to approve items 10.01 through 10.03 and 10.05.
I'll move approval of items 10.01 through 10.03 and 10.05.
Second. Okay. We have a motion for those items and a second. A motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Mr. Questenberry.
Yeah, I just have a question on the purchase of an electric oven. I know these gas convection ovens are tremendously expensive, but is Bishop's Peak Teach also a food, kind of a central food service site, and why are we buying electric?
That's a great question. I was prepared to tell you and talk to you about the financial aspect of these ovens, but the actual reason why electric, the only thing I can assume is that there may not be a gas connection in that facility, but I can find out for sure and make sure that however we're spending our money that we would do it wisely.
I'll take your assurance.
You don't need a further report. Okay, Marilyn?
Oh, I didn't realize my light was lit, but since it is, I I guess I'll speak.
Four scores.
Over the years, I have found that food services is really pretty frugal in their expenses, and they I never really have to question what they bring forward and request. So. If they want an electric oven, so be it.
Well, since I've been taken to the woodshed here, I move approval of...
It's not a wood stove.
No, it's not a wood stove. I will move approval of item 10.04.
And I'll second.
Food services used to be a moneymaker for us back before... They still are, that's true. Before the government regulations got in the way. So we have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, was it? Yes. Oh, that's right, Woodshed Questenberry. And second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. No, that was not being taken to the woodshed by Marilyn, believe me. I've been there. Do we have any items for advanced agenda? Catherine.
This could probably be in Friday notes, but I would like to know more information about the letter that we received from Dr. Natasha Raja regarding idling buses and whether there is a need for idling buses and what would be the problem with turning off the buses, et cetera, along those lines.
I believe the letter was communicating a link regarding the health effects
Correct.
Of idling buses. I don't think it had to do with our buses idling.
Oh.
And I believe that Mr. Pinkerton, have you responded to the concerns?
I have.
Okay.
Oh, yep. Maybe you can enlighten
but
me
I'll
about
share.
That. Okay.
But I'll share.
Okay. Yes, just I have seen buses idling from time to time, but I was concerned about what she had to say about the cause of asthma just by walking by an idling bus, and yep. would love to know about that.
And then just for the public, we've purchased new buses and converted to low emissions, and also we've raised our exhaust stacks up to the upper portion of the bus so that it has better circulation.
Oh, that's very reassuring.
And we also very low emissions to begin with those buses. So.
Excellent. But, more to come. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
I'm not doing that one.
You got the final?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. Go ahead.
I think both of these may be able to be handled rather differently than as agenda items, but I have a situation in the United States and that sometimes is addressed and sometimes isn't. A lot of good stuff. And then secondly, if I can, again, this is probably maybe handled. I was doing research on Common Core standards, and in a document from CSBA that Chris forwarded to me, as the wonderful region director that he is, there was a reference to implementing Common Core and its impact on board policies. And evidently, I think I saw about four that were referenced, and I don't know if they're on our books, but it might be time for us to be looking at, and I'll leave it up to you guys, but looking at our policies that might get in the way or could be help us implement Common Core standards. So, thank you.
Well, they'll do that. Okay.
Wait a minute. So where are these two suggestions? Where are we leaving them?
I think what I got was the board policy typically comes from the superintendent, and that okay. I see those guys over there shaking their heads, and so I'm thinking that they're going to be examining our policies and. That's okay. That would be something then that would come back to us if there were proposed amendments to them.
Yeah, tomorrow we're going to Santa Barbara to a Common Core LCAP process program seminar. We expect to come back with policies that should and need to be looked at. We expect to have more information about our template, and we have been talking about board policy revisions as a function of the new laws under LCFF and the LCAP requirements. So we will be bringing that to the board
okay.
Soon enough.
So basically staff is going to handle that aspect of how Common Core might impact. I'm just trying to make sure we have a clear record.
Yeah.
Yes. And then the Japanese internment.
I was just going to say that would be probably check with our GAMET anyway.
Yeah.
They should have that stuff. GAMET is our board policy service.
Oh, not about the intern.
No, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Back to board
yep.
policy.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right. That is the general policy. The general way this is driven. We get. Recommended
our
additions
friend,
or changes.
Our friends at CSBA send us quarterly advisories, so they are watching all those sorts of things that affect all their member districts and will make recommendations to us about changes they believe we should be making to our own policies.
And then that'll
we'll
drive
our
administration ARs.
And bring them forward to you.
Okay, good. We're paying them dues. They better be doing that. And then on the Japanese internment issue, okay. I'd like a little more information. First of all, do we have any of those folks so situated? And secondly, do they want this? I mean, it may make us feel good, but how does it make them feel, I guess?
I know from my days, we would only have one high school at that time, which would be San Luis Obispo High School. And in my days at San Luis Obispo High School, I wasn't around then, but the school kept very good records about their students that went into it, that fought in World War II. I can't say that they have records about students who were interned. I mean, obviously, we can find out what people were in the camps, but whether they went to our high schools, and there may be some investigative work that would need to be done, but I would venture to guess, because there was a lot of Japanese Americans living in this area at the time, that there must be some list somewhere that we can come up with.
And I can help direct you. Thanks.
Dan. All right. Any other advanced agenda items?
No.
Okay. Seeing none, anything further, reports by board members.
Yes, I had the opportunity the other night, and I meant to bring materials with me and hand them to the superintendent and to the assistant to superintendent, Mr. Robinette. Went to the PQ or PK group, which is a parent involvement in quality education recognition dinner, I guess is what it was at Cal Poly. And it's a program that's been adopted by Santa Maria Union High School District, Joint Union High School District, and is apparently being adopted by Paso Robles. And their outreach is to mainly what we used to call underserved or students. A lot of it is to immigrant parents, to involve them in classes to help them encourage their children to pursue post-secondary education. And
clear and very excited about what they're doing. And just two things came through loud and clear. One is they really, really want summer school. And number two is they're still concerned about the busing situation for the high school. It was a nice opportunity to attend that. Wednesday I was asked to be on a panel up in Paso Robles for a community engagement on the Common Core, which was organized by the PTA. There were 50 people that attended this meeting from the community. It was organized by the 24th District PTA. They did a great job promoting it. Last night was the PTA general meeting, and it was held at Los Osos, and Kevin Hotelling did the presentation for STEAM. And after the meeting, and I got phone calls, well, I got emails today on how do we get this, because the 24th District is, you know, from the Santa Barbara line all the way up to Paso Robles, and this is great, this is wonderful, and isn't this exactly what the Common Core wants us to do? So great job at Los Osos Middle School and Mr. Telling. And I just found out tonight a group of our teachers and staff and administrators attended a STEAM or STEM conference up in Sacramento. Didn't realize how exciting it was until I heard that they went to dinner together one night. They sat down and started talking and talked, and 3 hours later they got up from the table, and that's how excited they're going to be coming back to our district. So I think it's really good that we're looking at Wi-Fi and tablets for everybody, because we've got a big excited group coming back. I think they just, you know, chipped in their iPhones.
Okay, any further board reports? Okay, we'll be adjourned until, don't tell me, December 3rd, no, December 10th, no, we have an expulsion hearing on the 2nd, thank you, Kim, and then we'll be at CSBA at the beginning of the month, San Diego, and learning about Common Core and all kinds of exciting things, and we will reconvene on December 10th for the annual organizational meeting. Woohoo! Thank you all, good night.